The Tom Woods Show, episode 799.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're at your wit's end trying to think of a good gift idea for your brother, your father, or any significant man in your life, well, check out the limited edition holiday shave set from Harry's. Take $5 off at harrys.com when you use coupon code Woods. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Bob Murphy's back with us once again. How about that? We're trying to transition Bob back into being a regular guest after he and I started the Contra Krugman podcast, which we release one episode of every week, and we refute Paul Krugman every single week over at ContraKrugman.com. He sort of fell away as a guest. Well, I'm not letting him get away with that anymore. And I'm having him on today to talk about a topic that I thought would sort of blow over quickly, but is still being discussed. So I thought, what the heck? Let's talk about it. It's the whole Donald Trump deal with Carrier, this company that was threatening to send some jobs to Mexico, and Trump's deal apparently halted the movement of some of those jobs to Mexico. So we want to talk about the economics of that. And we also want to talk about the controversy among libertarians about whether that's something to cheer or whether that's something to be outraged about. And I think Bob's a good guy to discuss that with. Bob, as you may know, holds a PhD in economics from New York University. He's the author of many outstanding books. One of them is Lessons for the Young Economist, which is a textbook for late junior high, early high school students. You can get that book for free online, plus a teacher's edition for free. His real masterpiece so far in his life is Choice, subtitled Cooperation, Enterprise, and Human Action. It's like a distillation of Mises' Human Action. If you're too intimidated by that huge book, definitely check out Choice. TomWoods.com/choice will actually take you to the Amazon page for that great book. Wait till you see the blurbs for that book. People are basically saying Murphy is one of the greatest teachers of economics of all time. It's unbelievable, the blurbs, and they just keep coming, one after the other after the other. So the author of many important things. Check him out at consultingbyrpm.com. Bob, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Good that we're talking on this show and not only on Contra Krugman. In fact, we haven't even discussed what we're going to do for Contra Krugman this week. I've read the Krugman column, and I think we could go with either of his columns. But anyway, we'll talk about that on our own time. For now, I want you to talk about a topic that is still causing controversy among libertarians, and there are still social media arguments going on about it, and that is this whole deal that was apparently worked out by Donald Trump and this air conditioning company, this Carrier company, where apparently they're going to keep some jobs in the U.S. that might otherwise have been exported to Mexico in exchange for some kind of special tax break deal. Do you know the details? I mean, I don't think we know all the details, but what is the rough understanding of what's been offered to them?
Sure. So I think the story has evolved. So you're right. Originally, people were reporting it. I think the issue is that Carrier is an HVAC company, as you're saying. And so originally people were reporting it that it was making air conditioning units. But I believe the specific factory in question now and the jobs they're, quote, saving have to do more with furnaces. But that's like the actual reporting has evolved over time for that. So the way I'm seeing it reported is that they're claiming there were $7 million in, quote, performance-based tax breaks that were administered. And so I believe this is technically having to come from the state of Indiana. I mean, if you think about it, that's, you know, Trump's not the president yet, so he can't do anything directly in that respect. And also, you know, the president's not a dictator. He can't just do that. So I believe that was the deal that they had gotten. I've also seen reports that this deal was offered to them previously, and it was only because now of the fact that it was in the news and whatever. So that the big picture story is that this company Carrier was going to close its Indiana plant and move some 1,000 jobs to Mexico. And then now, because Trump intervened, famously tweeting on Thanksgiving Day that, hey, I'm working on this deal to keep these jobs here. You know, this is a new administration. These are my priorities. And then he gets to announce to much fanfare that, yep, we worked out a deal with them and they're going to stay. And so I've seen the number keep getting reduced. The latest figure I've seen is that they're going to keep 700 jobs in this Indiana plant.
I suppose at some point we'll talk about the economics behind the idea of you know, it's better to keep jobs in the U.S. and stuff like that. Let's leave that aside for now, because the
but first, do you want to talk about HVAC units?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's my first. No, what I want to talk about, of course, is the argument that libertarians are having about whether this is a good thing or not. Because on the one hand, you could say it's a good thing when fewer taxes are paid, and now this company will be paying less money in taxes, and that has to be a net benefit. And on the other hand, you have libertarians who say, but given that this is a selectively granted benefit and the competitors of this country aren't enjoying that benefit, this artificially privileges the one company at the expense of all the competitors. So we can't cheer this. This is a bad thing. And you've come out, you've taken a pretty strong stance on this. And I have people who are even supporters of the show who have exactly the opposite position from yours. So I'm going to play devil's advocate with you. First, lay out what your view is. Because you argue this is a good thing. How do you figure?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit even more nuanced than that, Tom. My position was more, I don't understand why libertarians are freaking out as if this is a horrendous thing.
Got it.
I mean, because there were reactions, you know, certain people acting as if this was, you know, the end and they couldn't believe it. And there was something qualitatively new here. Just to give you an example, so not that Larry Summers by any stretch is a libertarian, but, you know, he had a piece where he was saying that this is possibly signaling, you know, the demise of American capitalism. And he was, you know, starts out his piece talking about, I always thought of American capitalism as dominantly rule and law based, courts enforce contracts and property rights, and then he goes on. And then, of course, his point is to say, and now Donald Trump has changed all that, and what does this mean for the future? When Larry Summers was involved with the auto bailout when Obama first came in, where, you know, people, so we don't know how much he was involved with that, the minutia, but there they clearly, you know, threw the secured creditors out of the way to be able to pay off the unions and so on. So this idea, a lot of people who are just, you know, they need to go hit their swooning couch because this of what has happened here, I think there's a lot of hypocrisy involved. But you're right, in terms of narrow libertarians who we can say, yes, they have always been opposed to this stuff. My point was to say, look at what exactly is happening on this particular thing. I think, Tom, too, we should, before the show ends, come back to the whole 35% tariff thing, because that's a completely separate analysis. But on this carrier deal per se, what was the deal? They're saying, okay, we're going to give tax breaks to this particular company. And then there was also people speculating that maybe it was the parent company, United Technologies, that Trump had threatened, hey, when I take over, we're going to, you know, hit your military contracts, because they apparently have a lot of business that's defense contracts. So I say, okay, well, look at libertarians. They've been running around, particularly in 2016, saying taxation is theft. You know, those are the funny memes and stuff they're promoting. So, okay, so if it's theft and the big thief is stealing less from one particular victim, how are we outraged by that? You know, and so I used an analogy and I said, suppose, you know, the mafia is shaking down businesses. You know, this is the standard thing. They go in and say, hey, be a shame if something were to happen to your business and maybe you need some protection, you know. And so they're shaking down all these businesses on a street for protection money. And then for some reason, the Don, you know, maybe talks to one particular store owner who gives him a sob story about his kids in the hospital. And for some reason, the Don says, all right, you know what, guys, don't collect from this one store owner. And would a bunch of libertarians be outraged and say that's not fair and we should keep stealing from this guy too? We should have broad-based reduction in mob thievery? No, I think you would say, okay, that's good for him, and now try to do it with the other ones. And the thing that's really ironic, Tom, is partly one strain, I should say, of the outrage over this carrier deal when it was first announced. It was epitomized by Justin Wolfers, had a tweet about it, and I saw plenty of, you know, free market libertarians repeating the sentiment, was to say, oh, great, look at the horrible incentives. Now every business is going to pretend like they're thinking about offshoring or outsourcing in order to get these tax breaks. And so I'm like, why would that be a bad thing? That's exactly what you say would have been good if they gave this, you know, these tax cuts across the board. So I'll stop there and let you hit me on that, Tom. But that's my analysis, that I couldn't really understand why libertarians were acting so outraged. Let me just say, before we lose the train of thought, clearly, if Trump were to, you know, ask for my advice, or if I'm giving advice on how to reduce taxes, obviously picking particular companies that are friendly with the incoming administration and giving them targeted tax breaks, that's silly. If you, for a given amount of tax reduction you're willing to do, obviously, you know, cutting tax rates across the board is the way to do it. So I'm not questioning that. All I'm saying is libertarians are freaking out about this one deal when, strictly speaking, that should be a reduction in the amount of injustice in the world, according to many of their own, you know, professed value systems.
Well, here's how I would respond. Maybe I could see your mafia example and say, yeah, obviously the just outcome there would be for nobody to be harassed by the mafia. But obviously, at the same time, it doesn't mean that if one person winds up freeing himself from it, that it would be better for him to be under the thumb of the mafia again, because that would be more equal with everybody else. I get that there's a problem with that. What I guess people are concerned about is there a general rule that can be generalized from this particular case? Because if we're going to say this particular case is acceptable because fewer taxes are being paid, fewer people are being victimized, one fewer company is being victimized, the general rule would be companies – now, I know you're not saying that you favor this, but the general rule you could extrapolate by extrapolating from this and form would be companies favored by the government get special tax breaks. And over time, what that would mean is that only the ones getting the tax breaks would be able to stay in business. That's where this leads. And I think that's why libertarians are against it, because they don't like that principle.
Well sure, but – even again, and I feel silly, you know, it's not so much that I want to go to the barricades on this, but I do want to make sure libertarians are thinking this through. I guess part of what's motivating this is I think there were a lot of libertarians who really disliked Donald Trump, and they were just waiting for him to do something once he won the election, besides, you know, his crazy tweets and whatever and the outlandish things that he says off the cuff, and they wanted some tangible policy. And then when it was this thing where he was announcing, hey, we're reducing taxes on a company, they said, aha, we told you this guy's a monster, look at this dictator. And so it was more, I was just saying, wait a minute, we're freaking out because he's cutting someone's taxes? Are you sure that's what we want to be outraged over? So that's more where I'm coming from emotionally, if you will, Tom, on this. But to your narrow point there, I think the principle, let me put it this way. It's not correct to say, as some are claiming, that, oh, wait a minute, by him lowering taxes on this one company, therefore everyone else's taxes go up. That's strictly speaking not true. Really what's happening directly is that means the deficit would be higher than it otherwise would be, right? It's not that they're building into the tax code, oh, everyone else's rates have to get bumped up a little bit in order for this thing to be revenue neutral. No, the way they're explaining it is that they're just lowering how much they're taking from this one person. So if that makes the debt higher, and you say, okay, so that means down the road we're going to take more from future taxpayers because now the debt's going to be higher in the year 2050 than otherwise. Okay, well, when that time comes to pass and they go to raise taxes, then libertarians can quite correctly say, no, you're not supposed to do that. It'd be better to default on the debt. Shame on you for lending money to an organization based on systematic theft. All right. So again, I'm not saying, like, as an economic policy, this is great and sensible. Obviously there's much better things to do. There's better ways you would implement this. And certainly I would much rather any tax cut be tied to a dollar reduction in spending so that you're not having the debt go up higher than otherwise would have. But I'm saying people, a lot of libertarians, when they're talking about this, are just matter-of-factly asserting that means everyone else's taxes go up. And I want to say, technically, no, that's not true. And where you want to draw the line, if you want to be a purist about it, I would say, is not the part where, oh, wait a minute, you're cutting this guy's taxes, and then just assuming matter-of-factly that means you're going to have to jack up everyone else's. Well, no, when you go to actually do that, that's where you can have the outrage and say, whoa, you're taking money from people at gunpoint? That's not correct.
Well, how about placing you, let's place Bob Murphy in the shoes of a competitor of Carrier. And I want to know, would you have such pure intentions and such disinterested analysis if your money were on the line and if Carrier were getting this tax break? Would you give a press conference saying, we are delighted that our competitor is getting this tax break because it means there is less injustice in the world? Sure, we're still the victim of the same amount of injustice as before, but at least they saw their burden lifted. And if you wouldn't say that, then isn't there something hypocritical or not quite right in the analysis?
Well, for sure, I wouldn't have a press conference and say, this is an outrage. I demand that you raise their taxes again. Because, you know, then I would be calling for the government to take more money from someone than they were planning on taking. So, it's not that, again, it's not that I'm expecting libertarians to run around and dance a jig and high five and say, go Trump. It's that I just think it's odd that they were freaking out. Many of them, some of them were just, you know, being more sober analysts about it. But many were acting like this was just the beginning of the end. And here we go. Now Donald Trump's going to, again, what was really ironic was some people were worried that look at the incentives this sets up. Now every company's going to do this. And so it's like, oh, so the problem's not so much cutting one company's taxes. It's that you're worried he might just start cutting lots and lots of companies' taxes. And that's really what we're terrified of. So that's more what I'm talking about. Obviously, any particular competitor, I mean, yeah, I guess what you would say is, yes, Mr. Trump, you're right. It is hard for us to compete against cheaper foreign labor with all of these onerous taxes and regulations. So we just hope you follow through on your rhetoric. And once you take office, you know, push through and get Congress to pass broad based reductions like you've promised. So, I mean, that would be the consistent thing to say, and also probably would be better in terms of, you know, what customer could possibly get mad about that kind of statement. I should say, though, I know absolutely nothing about HVAC units, so probably my board would fire me immediately if they realized somehow in this thought experiment I was running their company.
And by the way, let me point out, because you wouldn't point it out, I'll point it out to listeners, Bob really does live his life according to his principles. But a guy as brilliant as Bob, and if you listen to Contra Krugman, you know Bob carries the whole weight of that show.
Well, Paul Krugman has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, Krugman, you know, we'll give him that. But Bob's a really smart guy, very intellectually creative, extremely sharp, and he could have a great academic career at a lot of institutions, but he is completely against the idea of receiving taxpayer money, even indirectly. So there are only a couple of institutions in the country he could possibly work for and stay true to those principles. So over at Texas Tech at the Free Market Institute where he is now, well, that's funded by private money, so that's okay for Bob. So Bob is over there as a research assistant professor. So when Bob says, I wouldn't hold that press conference, he wouldn't. I mean, that's who Bob is. So Bob, I'm just vouching. In the same way that Bill Weld was there to vouch for Hillary Clinton, I'm here to vouch for you.
All right. And people should take it with as much a grain of salt, I'm sure.
Indeed. All right. Let's talk about that 35% tariff thing, because there was, a misunderstanding about what the 35% tariff thing was. And then you wound up trying to adjudicate a dispute between Dilbert Scott Adams and Representative Justin Amash. First, tell me, what's the 35% thing? And then because I don't know if you want to get into this, but I think Congressman Amash was not really understanding even after you explained it, he then doubled down on his misunderstanding?
I think that's what happened. And again, we're in the twilight zone at this point. Not only is Donald Trump the president-elect, but now I was on Twitter refereeing a dispute over tariffs between Congressman Amash and Scott Adams, the guy who does the Dilbert comic. So this is not a setup for a joke, folks. This really happened. So yes, the specific thing is, what always happens is when you try to, as you know well, Tom, when you try to defend Trump on some specific thing, when you think the critics are being unfair and, well, no, wait a minute, let's look at what he actually said here. And then he'll go 2 seconds later and say something that's completely absurd and violates the thing, you know. So
right.
So fair enough for people who are more just saying, oh, come on, well, maybe it wasn't this one, but we knew Trump was going to say something nutty. Yeah, when he came out then shortly after this carrier deal went down and then had a more general principle saying any U.S. company that outsources, you're going to get hit hard. We're going to impose a 35% tariff on you when you try to sell your goods back in the United States. So for the record, that is an absolutely crazy policy. For one thing, how would you enforce that? Let me just say this before I forget, Tom. Suppose some company does that and then, you know, the Trump administration's targeting it and watching it. So you try to sell goods back into here. Well, the company could still produce that stuff and then sell it to some other company in the other country that could then ship it in the United States. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's no way, how would they possibly enforce that? This is kind of a silly thing when you think it through. But what happened was on Twitter, Justin Amash, who's been very anti-Trump and sort of, you know, standing up and saying, hey, you know, I don't care if he's got an R after his name, you know, principles are principles. And so he said, you know, he like retweeted one of Trump's things when he went off on that Twitter spree, the part about the 35% tariff. And Justin Amash said, no, this would be a 35% tax on American consumers, Right. So doing a standard analysis of, you know, why is a tariff bad, which is correct. You know, I would endorse that. And so then Scott Adams, again, the guy who does the Dilbert thing, and for people who don't know, on his blog over the last, let's say, 18 months or so, Scott Adams was predicting that Trump was going to win and was saying that, you know, Trump's persuasion skills are amazing. So Scott Adams was saying, you know, I don't know anything about the policies. I don't know if he'd be a good or bad president. I'm just saying this guy, I've never seen someone so masterful at persuasion. And so, and he did, you know, he was on the record for a while thinking Trump was going to win. So that's kind of why he's now in this realm. And so anyway, Scott Adams jumps in responding to Amash and says, no, you're misunderstanding. That 35% threat of a punitive tariff for companies that outsource is so high, no U.S. company will outsource. So therefore, the tariff won't kick in. Okay, so he was just trying to say that it's wrong for you to argue there's going to be a 35% tax on Americans, because he's saying this will actually never get triggered. Trump's just holding it out there to keep these companies domestic. And so then Amash responded and said, no, there's still going to be a tax. You know, Americans are still going to pay more even if no companies move. And it wasn't clear to me, Tom, that Amash fully got that point. And so I kind of just jumped in and said, hey, I'm totally against Trump's proposal, but Representative Amash, I think you're missing what this guy Scott Adams is saying, and da da da. And I was trying to clarify. And just even with the back and forth, he still kept saying how, like, no, it's still a tax. And the, I just wasn't sure that he was fully getting it. But again, all this was on Twitter. So take that for what it's worth. Possibly he did get it, and just with the brevity of the tweets, it came off like he didn't know. But yeah, I thought he had it, and then two tweets later, one reading it would have thought he believed that, no, this was still going to be a tariff applied on goods, and hey, tariffs are bad. They raise prices for consumers.
Well, let's talk now about the general principle of, let's try and keep these air conditioning jobs or whatever it is in the U.S. as opposed to in Mexico. Because that, on the surface of it, sounds pretty good for Americans, because Americans will have those jobs and that'll be great. And the only thing we have to worry about is that maybe air conditioners will be marginally more expensive than before. But, you know, what's a small-minded consideration like that when compared with people's livelihoods? But there are many, many things you could say in response to this. One would be that if it is less expensive to produce the air conditioners in Mexico, somebody else is going to do that, outcompete Carrier, solve that, and that's going to hurt Carrier unless we put a big tariff on air conditioners. Secondly, if other foreign countries are allowed to use production chains that involve labor in Mexico, again, they're going to undercut the American company. It doesn't seem like a sustainable model in the long run. What else would you say as a way of responding to the "but Americans keep their jobs" argument?
Sure. And so here, I think it is important to distinguish between the two approaches. So again, this is part of the irony, you know, the first approach being, let's keep them in through carrots, you know, by giving them tax breaks and possibly regulatory relief, things like that. That for years, what were libertarians saying when critics were worried about free trade and, oh, how can we possibly compete with the, you know, cheap labor in China or India or whatever the latest boogeyman is? The standard libertarian response was to say, well, hey, Americans are more productive. You know, they have more tools and equipment, and so they should get paid more, and maybe these jobs do deserve to go overseas. But they would also say the thing to do is to cut U.S. taxes and regulations. That's really what's making U.S. business so uncompetitive. And so I thought it was kind of ironic that Trump's solution to a company that wanted to outsource was, okay, let's lower your taxes and possibly your regulations. And then libertarians were freaking out when for decades, that's what they've been saying the problem is, that it's not free trade per se. So on that issue, I think that would deal with the problem, Tom, where if you're worried, hey, if Carrier wanted to move jobs to Mexico and now they don't because of some deal that Trump did with Pence, isn't that mean they're just going to go out of business? Well, no, not if the reason they're staying is because now they got their taxes lower. Now maybe they can compete with the Mexican firm, even taking into account
that's a good argument.
You know, cheaper Mexican labor now because they don't have that, you know, tax burden. So that's, you know, one issue. So that argument about this is just silly, they're still going to go under, not if they're staying because of tax relief.
Right. And by the way, that very point that you just made goes to show that obviously to some extent it is government involvement that is pushing these jobs out of the U.S. because otherwise there'd be no way, there'd be nothing you could offer them that could keep them here. There'd be no relief of government burdens you could offer them to keep them here if that wasn't at least part of the problem.
Right.
But apparently they are being kept here because they've been given relief.
Right. So now on the other side, though, if now are they staying not because of the carrots, but because of the stick, either because United Technologies is worried that their defense contracts are going to be jeopardized, or because of this, you know, 35% punitive tariff threat. So yeah, there the critics are correct that if that somehow keeps companies from leaving, if the reason they wanted to leave is because it was uncompetitive, if it made more sense to ship the operations overseas, well, then presumably either, you know, some Mexican firm would do it itself, or some other capitalist around the world would see that opportunity now that wasn't being grabbed by American capitalists, and they would go ahead and set up a factory and then, you know, sell air conditioners or furnaces into the U.S. at rates that the domestic firms couldn't compete with. So that element is true. I should say more generally, you know, Mises talks about this, that when you have a regulatory state and it starts intervening more and more, it had to go hand in hand with high tariff barriers. Like, that was the only way to prevent the immediate effects of these interventions from being so obvious that even the average citizen would realize, oh, wait a minute, you know, if you all of a sudden impose these crazy workplace safety regulations or these crazy taxes or whatever, and you don't apply those to foreign companies, then of course they're going to undersell our domestic plants and they're not going to be able to compete. And so Mises, you know, thought that it's no coincidence that these highly interventionist states also would embrace protectionism, because he said they needed to do that just, you know, for PR reasons. But having said all that, it's not that it undoes the problem. It just kind of rearranges where the harm falls, if you think of it that way. But your general point, Tom, is you can do it either in terms of a principled approach in terms of property rights, or you can do it in terms of economic analysis of just, you know, harms and benefits. As far as property rights, that it's some guy going to a factory in Indiana making furnaces, he doesn't have some sort of moral claim to be able to do that indefinitely. And so if conditions change and now consumers say, you know what, I want to spend my money buying a furnace that's made in Mexico, you know, who is Mike Pence or Donald Trump or anybody else to come in and say, no, we're going to prevent you from doing that, ultimately by people with a bunch of guns changing that, because we don't like that outcome, that's not moral. And then also, as far as the pure economics of it, I mean, this is standard stuff, but yeah, if you artificially protect one particular company or industry, you're helping the workers there, but you're harming the consumers. And so you're benefiting some people at the expense of others. And standard economic analysis shows that protectionist measures impose more harms on the country as a whole than the benefits. But the reason they're politically popular is the benefits are concentrated in a small group of people. Whereas if everybody collectively spending a little bit more for a furnace, that doesn't hurt too much. That's not nearly as painful as somebody losing his job.
There was at least one union representative who said, yeah, it's good that Trump did this, but the fact is there aren't enough goodies Trump could give away. And of course, what he really means is just there aren't enough burdens that he could lift to keep a lot of companies in the U.S., because we're dealing with $3 an hour labor in Mexico. We're competing against that. That's a very standard argument. What's the answer to that?
Well, the answer is, to push further, say, why is it that American workers make so much more than workers in Mexico? Or going the other way, you know, if ultimately the reason carriers, you know, say, hey, we're running the numbers here and it makes no sense, why would we stay here and pay American workers whatever, $12, I have no idea what they pay, $12 an hour, when we can go to Mexico and pay whatever, $5 an hour? And you'd say, okay, well then why don't they just cut the wages of the U.S. workers down to what people in Mexico are earning, and then they could stay, right? And the reason is, if they tried to do that, the American workers would quit and say, no, I can make more at McDonald's. Why would I do that? And so really what that is showing is that American workers have better alternatives than to be going and getting paid $3 an hour to make furnaces or whatever, air conditioning units. And so if there are workers around the world that really is the best use of their time, then it makes sense for them to be doing that. Because by the same token, you say, well, geez, those poor workers over, you know, in the Mexican factory making whatever wages that to us seem unconscionable, or forget Mexico, you know, somewhere else, even poorer countries around the world where they're working in what might be considered sweatshops or what have you. Well, that's the best alternative they have. You know, Ben Powell, my colleague here at the Free Market Institute, has all kinds of work on sweatshops and showing the reason they go to these things is because that's better than the alternatives. And so it's ultimately the reason U.S. workers get paid more is because we have more capital. It's not because we have more regulations. It's not because, thank goodness, Franklin Roosevelt or Woodrow Wilson was in office way back when and signed legislation, and that's why American workers get paid five times as much as these workers over here. No, American workers get paid five times as much because they produce five times as much. And that's because they have better training and they work with more capital equipment. And you're not going to get investors to form more capital if now they think there's threats to how they run their business. So that's in terms of the long run effect. I mean, the critics of Trump's angry tweets or whatever threats, they're totally correct in that respect, that this is going to have a chilling effect. And if you tell a business, by the way, if you set up and have a bunch of employees and then try to shut down and outsource when the conditions change, we're going to hit you hard. Well, then that's going to reduce your incentive to open up a plant in the first place. Just like Europe, certain European countries where it's really hard to fire people or lay people off, that doesn't really help workers in the long run. That makes it harder to get hired in the first place. If the employer knows on the back end, if things don't work out, there's no way I can get rid of this guy without a lawsuit, then you're not going to hire him in the first place. You're just going to hire subcontractors and things like that.
And not to mention that there are cascade effects throughout the economy of one industry seeing prices go up in American firms. So it could be air conditioners, it could be steel, it could be anything. There are all these other industries that are represented in the U.S. that use steel that's now artificially expensive, or air conditioners that are artificially expensive. They use those things in their own production process, and that makes them less competitive. So it's not as if we can just magically help this one group at no one's expense, or that it's just a few extra pennies for some American consumers. It harms this whole invisible network of other industries that now become somewhat less competitive, and they become less competitive still the more the logic of this is applied from industry to industry to industry. Then various industries become less competitive because they have artificially inflated prices for their own inputs. So there's a real kind of Alice in Wonderland aspect to all this that I mean, that's probably not the best analogy, but you follow what I'm saying. There is this sense that all we have to do to get the kind of country we want is impose some restrictions, crack some skulls, and then it's prosperity.
Yeah, exactly. And so again, I understand where the Trump's critics were coming from, even on the narrow carrier deal, let alone the later stuff about the 35% tariff,
yeah,
where they were saying, you know, this is not the way to do good policy. You can't just make one-off deals. I get that. So again, my point was simply, let's just be a little bit more careful with our outrage. We're really going to freak out about him cutting somebody's taxes. But you're exactly right. I mean, I think the way to look at it is there's a couple of ways. I'll just give two of them. One is just to say U.S. workers are going to, you know, go to where their labor is rewarded the most, where it's more efficient for them to go. And in the long run, if the government doesn't mess with wages and so on and hiring practices, everybody who wants a job gets a job. And the question of putting in tariffs, it doesn't change the total level of employment. It just changes the sectors of where people are employed. And ultimately, you don't make the country wealthier on the whole by taking away people's options. And that's what a tariff really does, is it just says, no, we're going to artificially penalize products coming in from this certain area. So, yeah, that helps certain domestic producers, but it also hurts other firms. Like you're saying, Tom, like firms that want to use certain inputs or whatever, then if they have to pay more now because of a tariff where they could have gotten it cheaper from abroad, well, now their cost of production go up and they might say, oh, gee, now I can't hire as many workers. So there are jobs, quote, destroyed in that sector as well. Another thing, too, I think this was Henry George's point, was to say that isn't it funny? We think, you know, in peacetime, oh, we're going to levy a high protective wall around our country and create jobs and stimulate our own industry and you know, give employment to our own people. And yet if we're at war with some other country, what do we do to hurt them? We send our battleships and surround their country and cut off imports. You know, we impose a blockade. So with the logic of protectionism, you know, aren't we doing a favor to that other country? Like, aren't we creating, you know, a massive demand for workers and rising wages in their country when we blockade them? And the answer, of course, is no, that's not what we're doing. You hurt a country when you cut off their access to foreign markets.
Yeah, exactly. So if you were at war with a country, what you should, if the logic of protectionism were correct, you would want to immediately take out all the tariff enforcement mechanisms, all the customs houses. You'd want to destroy all those because those are what are what's supposedly making the country wealthy. If we could get rid of those and have goods flow in freely, we'd impoverish that country and that would help. And yet no country at war has ever done that to its opponent. So it's worth asking why. People, of course, Bob, should be, if they know what's good for them, they should be reading your free advice blog over at consultingbyrpm.com. So, of course, as always, I'll link to that on our show notes page. It's tomwoods.com/799. Bob, you were this close to being my guest for episode 800. This close. But
the timing was, if Trump had just waited a day or two, it would have worked out.
It would have worked out.
Tom, is it unfair that I give away free advice? Because there's all these firms charging for advice, and I'm throwing people out of work, basically, if you think about it.
Yeah, that's right. And plus, aren't you giving the free advice from Mexico?
I do not say where I'm from.
How am I supposed to compete with Murphy's advice? He's setting his price at zero. I know. It's an injustice. But on the other hand, when you see the quality of the advice, you'll understand.
Hey!
All right. ConsultingByRPM.com. I got also a bunch of Bob's books linked at tomwoods.com/799. You got to check those out. And of course, if you're not listening to the podcast Bob and I do every week, I think it's time to really ask yourself serious questions about your own life. Contra Krugman has been around for over a year, so you've had ample time to come to find it on your podcatcher. Now may be that glorious magical day when you say, oh, 63 more episodes with Tom and Bob. Amazing. So ContraKrugman.com is where our podcast is. There's a lot of things you could do relating to Bob Murphy, and they're all going to be linked at tomwoods.com/799. Bob, thanks for carving out some time to cover this with us today.
Well, as you know, my opportunity cost is zero, so.
That's a good point. Thanks again.
Thanks.
All right, let me tell you about a brand new website created by another listener of this show, and the site is Diocrates.com. It's a blend of Diogenes and Socrates, so Diocrates.com. The creator of the site says that humanity has basically become slaves to an ideology, to a pointless and often destructive ideology, both philosophically and economically, and it's an ideology we need to emancipate ourselves from. And so on his site, he's going to ask a lot of deep and profound questions and try and find his way toward the answer. So there's some great posts there already on a variety of topics, but from this Diocrates point of view. So check it out at Diocrates.com, linking to it at tomwoods.com/799. Remember, we are getting close to the end now of 2016, so make your New Year's resolution that you'll start that site or blog that you know you've been needing to start, but grab your hosting through my link and you get all these really great bonuses, including a publicity boost from a certain podcast host you know. Grab all those goodies at tomwoods.com/publicity. Tomorrow is episode 800, and an old friend we've talked to in the past, I guess I'd call him an old friend now because I've gotten to know him a little bit, and a guy I know everybody likes. You're all going to be speculating it's Ron Paul or Lou Rockwell or one of my frequent guests. It's someone who's been on only once before, but a guy I admire very much is coming back to join me for episode 800 tomorrow, and I hope you will too. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.